Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Streams of Winter, live stream 4, Asha Greyjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Streams of Winter. We are Radio Westeros, and thanks for tuning in to our live stream today. Last week we focused on Theon Greyjoy, and today we turn our gaze towards his sister, Asha, in The Winds of Winter. What will be Asha's role in the upcoming book? To help me answer all questions, here's the other half of Radio Westeros, Lady Gwyn.
Hello there. Hey, everyone. Thanks for being here today. Really excited to talk about Asha in The Winds of Winter. And to help us with that conversation, let us also welcome our guest returning here. Welcome, Aziz.
Hey, everybody. It's great to be here. I'm super happy to be talking about Asha. We don't get to talk about some of these Winds of Winter characters nearly enough, I think.
I think you're right. I think we tend to focus on some of the, you know, much more major characters. So it's kind of cool to break down. She's still a major character, a point of view character, but she doesn't get enough love, I think.
So yeah. Let's do it. We maybe have some ideas on why she might be a little more major, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we got a lot to talk about, actually. So, quick reminder, everyone listening, about spoilers. Spoilers, everything. We usually don't talk about the show in our regular episodes, but here we'll be talking books, spoiler chapters, show, and beyond, you name it. So, why don't we back over to you, Yoke Boy, and get started.
Okay, let's begin our discussion on Asha. So, in 2014, George appeared on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. He was kind of beavering away in his studio, and in the background, you could see his computer monitor, and he appeared to be writing or editing something. So the fandom grabbed their magnifying glasses to see if they could decipher what was written on that screen. And based on this screenshot, what's known now as the Asha fragment, it seems like she'll be our Battle of Ice point of view. So, my question, and I'll start with you, Lady Gwyn. If Asha's a confirmed POV, will there be others? Because, say, in the Blackwater, it was complex. It wasn't just from a single person's point of view. What do you think?
I think that there's an obvious answer in that Theon is they're right there sharing a space with Asha, so we certainly could get some of his viewpoint on the battle. They might be in slightly different spaces when the battle happens, but there might be others. Other thoughts, guys?
Well, we're talking about which POVs we might get for the Battle of Ice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Certainly, there's some other options, but with, like what you said, the fragment tells us a lot. And just the fact that she's got the proximity and the fact that she's already been our POV for the lead up to it, right? She's the last chapter we get in Dance with Dragons, of course, in The Winds of Winter, we get the Theon chapter, but Asha's in that. So, as far as, since we know there won't be new POVs, if George hadn't said there won't be new POVs minus epilogue prologue, then we could be infinite here with our potential guesses. But thank you, George, for narrowing that down a little bit. But right. it's kind of hard to like imagine John. I mean, it's possible that John could be there, the witness, or Davos, but I mean, these guys don't even know where this Crofter's village is. Like, how are they going to even find it?
It's not like
it?
They have a phone.
Yeah.
So, hey, get over here quick.
I think we can entertain the possibility of something else, but it just seems really straightforward that it'll be Asha or maybe Theon that gives us, or both. I mean, we've had battles with multiple POVs before, so we could certainly give that some consideration that it'll be a multiple POV affair.
One idea that I've heard is that we get some of this in a Bran POV because there was the noted weirwood on the island there. Do you give that any thought, Aziz?
Not really, because, I mean, yes, but I ultimately would say no, probably not, because I think George is going to be really sparing with the Bran chapters, but even if you don't agree with that, it seems a little odd. I mean, why, when you have someone right there to see it, why would we need this mystical supernatural view of it? On the other hand, the answer to that question might be something George has in mind that's really important. Just because I don't have an answer to why doesn't mean there isn't one. This is George's imagination we're talking about here, after all. So, but again, multi-point of view. So with that option, I'm really just against a prediction of Bran being the only POV for it.
Oh, yeah.
Be a little wacky to me. But yeah, if multiple no POVs, yeah, that could see that. And certainly him looking back on it, maybe. Maybe he's got like a POV just after it, and he thinks about what he just saw, maybe.
That's interesting. So if the Asha fragment has confirmed to us now that she will be perhaps the main POV, let's say, of this battle, how many POVs will Asha get in total in Winds, bearing in mind it's just such a crowded field? What do you think, Lady Gwyn?
Well, you know, last week I mentioned that I feel like Theon's arc is more important than him just continuing to be a fly on the wall for what's going on around him. So I don't see him staying with Stannis to continue to give us that exposition like he did inside Winterfell in A Dance with Dragons. So I think that's going to have to be Asha showing us, you know, what Stannis is up to in this battle and beyond, up to a point. So I would say she's got at least three in, you know, battle kind of aftermath and then kind of what happens next. I mean, what happens next might be after Stannis dies or who knows, maybe some other things that we're going to talk about later in the episode. But, and God knows if she returns to the Iron Islands, there could even be more. But
so you're saying at least three, and that's quite logical, I think. So what do you think, Aziz? Does that sound right to you? Three or four?
Yeah, I think it sounds right to me. I could see it being a lot more. Three is how many she had in A Dance with Dragons. And that would be, and like y'all said, the field getting so crowded is a real issue as far as guessing more than a few for any character, even though we know some of them are going to be trimmed down. And the fact that Theon is nearby, at least for now, they could get split up. But in the short term, that's an argument that she might have some of her scenes will be seen through Theon's eyes. It really is a big question afterwards, though. I think that she's pretty much a lock for the Battle of Ice. After that, like you say, she can't just be gone. I don't expect she'll die during the Battle of Ice. She may not survive the book, but I don't think during the Battle of Ice, her dying during that would be kind of wild. No, she's a useful hostage to either side, so her death would be kind of unexpected for that reason. So, but yeah, like you said, there's other stuff we have to talk about later in the episode that involves her being a witness to things. And this, in that case, she might be even more solitary in terms of witness potential, or at least the field is narrowed down even more. So that really does lend itself to at least three, potentially six or seven, which would be really high. I mean, seven is how many Theon had in A Dance with Dragons. And that's the fourth most. It was you know, Jon, Tyrion, Daenerys, Theon. You know, so not that he was, you know, there's a pretty big gap between Dany and Theon, but still, there's a lot. The point is, there's a lot going on in the North. The North is becoming important again. It wasn't prominent at all in Storm of Swords, because Bran Winterfell was burned and Bran was heading to the Wall. So sure, he's in the North, but it wasn't, the Northern politics was gone for a while, because Roose Bolton's in the South and there's no manpower. So it's really coming back as a major plot now. So I could see a lot of attention being paid to it. It's kind of like replacing the Riverlands as our main non-King's Landing and non-Wall spot to be spending a lot of time in.
Okay, so why don't we continue discussing the North and the so-called Battle of Ice. Now, this battle was set up in A Dance with Dragons, but George ran out of pages. There are binding limits, so it will no doubt make an epic inclusion to the early chapters of Winds. And leading into this battle, Stannis seems confident given that he holds the ground. So why exactly is Stannis feeling so sure of himself given the dire state of his ranks and the weather? What do you think, Aziz?
Well, it's really interesting having, I just reread the final Asha chapter and having reread the Theon chapter recently and then looking at our notes and everything, because the perspective on Stannis from his soldiers before the Theon chapter is that he's a little bit lost. Maybe he's been staring in the flames too much. There's no question of their loyalty, but they're all just really unsure what's going to happen. And they don't feel like Stannis hasn't been seen in a few days. When he comes out for the burning that Asha witnesses, no one's seen him except for a few close associates in like 3 days. So, and they've been there at the Crofters Village for 19 days. So, but then you go to the Theon chapter and you get close up on Stannis and he is issuing orders. He's got plans. He's on top of things. It's like classic old Stannis where he is just on top of things and has he has energy and he has, he knows what he's doing basically, whether it's going to work or not, I don't know, but he is somewhat confident and aggressive and it's Stannis taking charge. Basically, there's a lot of ways you could put that, but it's a night and day kind of perspective when you look at what people are seeing from him. And then you actually get up close and he's pretty on top of things, despite the desperate situation. He certainly is not afraid, not showing it, or he doesn't seem to be feeling lost. And as y'all said, he seems to have a plan, and it may relate to what we're seeing with, it's kind of foreshadowed by that one ranger, Noseless Ned, who's like, there's too many holes in the ice, y'all. It's a miracle more people haven't fallen in, you know. So it's like, yes, yeah, like, exactly. Are you telling us something here?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's a pretty big deal. And I think Stannis has confidence in his plan. He's confident in the quality of the leadership of his opponents, which is to say not very high quality, and that gives him confidence. He knows how important leadership is, and he thinks theirs is bad. And he likes what he's heard from Winterfell. He knows he has the upper hand as far as undermining their trap. He knows in the Lash Asha chapter, everyone's like, oh, the Karstarks are going to be given Winterfell when we take it. But then in the Theon chapter, that's you find out, nope, definitely not going to give to the Karstarks, because their Stannis has sniffed out their treason. So I think it gets the impression that Stannis is going to do well because he seems so confident and prepared. And even though it looks bad, he's got a plan. And I don't know. It gives me confidence. Maybe it's just Stannis's confidence is meant to trick us a little bit, but I believe it.
I do too. I think, you know, I think when he says to Theon, we hold the ground, and Theon, who he has these flashes where he's kind of like his old self, and he's like, what do you mean we hold the ground? And you can tell he's thinking of sort of the traditional we hold the higher ground. That's very, you know, very traditional military, you know, maxim where you hold the high ground, you're going to win. But that's not what Stannis is talking about. He never said we hold the high ground. He just said we hold the ground. And he's obviously, he says it with such confidence. And then, like you said, the Boltons have blundered, you know, because they've sent out, you know, most of their strength, or at least half their strength, I guess, arguably. And really all they really had to do is wait and let Stannis and his troops die in the snow. So his confidence is definitely, like you said, night and day between the end of Dance, beginning of Winds.
And it's not empty, right? Like, he gives reasons.
He has reasons. Like, he definitely, I definitely feel that from him. It was kind of like, oh, this is the Stannis that, you know, we're, that we, the Stannis that we knew and loved has returned.
He was just thinking about Janos Slink getting his head cut off. That's all he really needed to, like, re-rejuvenate. He's like, man, that Jon Snow really did the right thing there. Yeah. I liked that.
He was like, not really. Yeah.
So let's talk about something which might be making Stannis happy. That these holes in the ice. Lady Gwyn, how do you see this kind of trap working? How's it going to function when you've got an ice where, you know, it's been pointed out, it's been drilled, and there's been circles cut into it? How do you think Stannis is thinking about this as a trap?
Well, I mean, you know, he's we all clearly think that he's thinking of getting the phrase onto the ice one way or the other. You know, it's like Chekhov's thin ice. It's mentioned enough times late in A Dance with Dragons that the ice is very thin. So, you know, does he, we talked about this in our most recent episode, that, you know, does he put a some sort of something out on that on the island where the weirwood tree is to sort of lure them out there to make them think that the ice is solid, maybe not even ice, maybe just solid ground, that, you know, they could just, you know, here's, I would think maybe the Northmen, because they have the whatever they call them in the books, but basically they're snowshoes, so they can get out there probably relatively safely, whereas, you know, Stannis's heavy horse probably should stay off the ice. So, you know, my thought was he would bait the trap with Northmen on the island, and then, well, there's lots of ideas, aren't there, about how he could cause the ice to break. You know, there's the famous night lamp theory, which I think we should probably give a lot of consideration to.
Yeah, I think the idea of the night lamp theory is that Stannis gives some kind of signal, perhaps using his magical sword. Remember that it glows. So if it's at night, he might kind of be on a tower and wave that sword. And then he could use catapults onto the ice to make it collapse when he wants to. So everything's on his terms. And, you know, he really would be holding the ground, as he said. What do you think to this idea, Aziz? Is there any kind of historical parallel that it speaks to?
Well, as far as a historical parallel to ice fighting, there's definitely a lot of examples of in the real world. There's one particularly famous example that I'm forgetting at this point, but I'll find it.
Is it Nevsky?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. So basically, there's lots of places in the world, especially Russia and Scandinavia and some other places, that have areas that are very different depending on what time of year it is. There's area like large lakes that freeze over completely and thoroughly versus, you know, maybe not so thoroughly. And Stannis, speaking again to Stannis's confidence, he's very experienced in battle. And he has the kind of conviction that shows that he understands what factors matter most. And he knows that he's just so confident in this trap working. You mentioned what Theon said before, Lady Gwyn. He said, "What ground? This wretched little village, you have no high ground here, no walls to hide behind, no natural defenses." And he says, "Yet." And then the ravens say, "Yet." Then one quoked and the other muttered, "Tree, tree, tree." So yeah, I think that's part of what y'all were saying with the whole, with the tree on the island, and maybe that could play a role somehow. But yeah, I think the night lamp is a big deal because it's the way that the tower, even if there's no, even if he doesn't use his sword, which I think is a great idea as far as a signal, as at least it gives him an option to do that. But just the tower as a beacon to lead the Freys towards it, and the Boltons or whoever is coming there, and the Manderlys, they'll be, they want to be found. They don't want them to be looking around and approach the battle from a different direction. They want to lead them on a specific path and have them approach a specific way. It really sets it up nicely because they are using their own apparent weakness as part of the trap. Stannis says, "His knights will be horsed, ours must fight afoot, his men will be well-nourished, ours go into battle with empty bellies. It makes no matter." It's like, wow. In fact, it might. He's almost arguing that it will help because it will make them overconfident. He's like, well, they're going to rush in and finish. It's almost like the arguments about Brienne. Like, Brienne's mastered arms told her, like, look, they're going to want to beat you quickly because they won't want anyone to say they were tested by a woman. So, you know, take your time, play defense, let them come at you. And so it's a similar kind of argument here. To them, this should be easy to the Freys and Manderlys. They're looking at what they think is going to be an easy fight, just mop up duty. So they're not going to, it goes against their nature of showing courage to be cautious against a weak foe. So that all is real. All these things are working really well for Stannis, and he just seems to, I think he's just he's seized on all that and is absolutely certain that it will work because he understands the mind of low-level commanders like Sir Stupid, as he calls him.
Right. I was just going to say, let's talk about Stupid Hosteen Frey.
Yes, let's. So if this ice trap, if the fandom's got it right and this ice trap really works, what's going to happen to the Frey contingent? Will or the whole host fall into the ice, or is that kind of wishful thinking? Will the battle be more complex? What do you think, Lady Gwyn?
Oh, you know, I'm sure it'll be incredibly complex, but I do think that the narrative noose is kind of tightening on House Frey. Look, it might not give us these satisfactory conclusions to a lot of major point of view arcs. Maybe we'll get some unsatisfactory conclusions, things that we don't really want, that's been hinted at. But we might not get that sort of stuff yet, but I no doubt that we'll get satisfying events. So I think that said, 2,000 Freys turning into ice cubes would be very satisfying, or near enough. So, you know, there's that. And then, you know, there's other factors because it's not just the Freys, right?
No, they're going to be joined by the Manderlys, who are going to be behind them and following. So Aziz, will the Manderlys kind of show up and join Stannis, or could they be mistaken for foes, or another idea? What do you think?
I think, yeah, there's a lot of potential for chaos, for sure. But George has set it up so that I think it will make sense if the Manderlys are able to do exactly what they want, which is hang back and join the attack the way they want to, which hopefully means attacking the Freys from behind. For example, Theon says, "Frey and Manderly will never combine their strengths. They will come for you, but separately." So, you know, some of Theon's predictions are maybe not great. He's overly worried about Ramsay for obvious psychological reasons. But we also have this other evidence of Hosteen Frey being pish-posh about the snow. He already lost one horse to a pit trap the one, you know, and Aenys, he lost a relative to a pit trap as well. Hastings already lost an ear to frostbite. And he says something along, where's that line? He says something like, no less a man than Hastin Frey, who had been heard growling that he did not fear a little snow, lost an ear to frostbite. So it's you can see how his courage is misplaced. It's not fear. You're not supposed to like be afraid or not afraid of snow. You're supposed to consider how it impacts the campaign. It's a consideration, not a like thing to like overcome your fear of, you know, it's like he's thinking about it like an enemy, right? Like that's the kind of sir stupid thing that Stannis is referring to. He's like, this guy doesn't know how to properly frame things. He's everything to him is something to be brave about, to face with a sword. And that those kind of people are really easy to trick, especially when they're in very unfamiliar territory, which has also been pointed out a lot. You can kind of just see the language George uses to describe the flaws and the shortcomings the Frey army has. Leadership, overly brave, wanting to kill their foe quickly, all this stuff. It's just all these things imply you're walking into a trap.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I mean when I say the narrative noose is tightening. George has done such a good job of setting them up as overconfident, as out of their element, you know. And maybe Hastin, who, you know, thinks he can just brave, you know, outbrave the snow, ought to talk with Tormund Giantsbane, who wants to know if your sword can cut cold. Hastin, you know, like, no, you kind of have the wrong idea about things if that's how you're approaching it. So we didn't really talk about, or I don't think we mentioned the fact that Stannis thinks that Manderly's killed his dear Davos.
He says,
I think after that quote you read where he, you know, where Theon says, you know, the phrase that the Manderlys won't fight with the phrase. I think Stannis says something along the lines of, you know, I'll deal with the Manderlys because they killed Davos.
Mm. Yeah.
So, that could be the awkward thing that happens after, you know, the phrase fall through the ice and we, the readers who, you know, from a meta point of view, think about the Manderlys and Stannis as kind of natural allies, right? We'll be cheering and then, you know, Stannis could start trying to deal with the Manderly.
So. Yeah, I mean, the Manderly commander will surely know whatever he needs to know, whoever that commander is, because it's obviously not Wyman. And and the phrase in Manderly's, Hastin literally cut Wyman's face open, neck open, you know, so the Manderlys are probably quite ready to, you know, bring out their grand plan. They're like, oh, we've been waiting. Let us loose, Wyman, like, just like give us the green light. We want to get these guys badly.
Because
obviously Wendell Manderly also, I mean, they're ready to go.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. They, you know, if they get the chance, that's why, you know, I feel like they're going to be hard on the rear of the phrase and not because they're coming to fight with them. Obviously Theon saw that. But what Theon failed to see maybe is that the Manderlys have no intention of fighting Stannis and other Northmen on behalf of Roose Bolton. I mean, that's more than likely not what their goal is in this. I consider it a gift that Roose Bolton sent them all out together, you know, at least a gift to the Manderlys, because I'm sure they're going, just you wait, you know.
That's certainly what Stannis thinks. Bolton has blundered.
Yeah,
he doesn't mince words as usual. Right. Like, nope, strategic mistake, clearly.
Yep.
No way around it.
Okay, why don't we talk about the potential for things to go wrong, you know, against Stannis now, because this is on topic. So, in the Asha fragment, which we talked about at the start of the episode, we learned that the Freys seem to have beheaded Crowfood Umber, and they're parading his head as part of their battle cry. So, Lady Gwyn, what what do we think happened to Crowfood? What was the situation?
Well, you know, he and his green boys built, dug those pits, which led to Aenys falling in, dying, and Hastine lost a horse. He said that so he's pissed off. So obviously, Crowfood has pissed off Hastine Umber, and he's there with a very small, you know, group of young boys, kind of standing right athwart their path as they come out of Winterfell and make for Stannis's position. So they really didn't have a chance, you know, unless they ran away and somehow melted into the wilderness. They didn't have much of a chance to stand against the Freys, because that's 2,000 Freys, you know, fresh, well, as fresh as can be, coming out of a besieged or snowed in holdfast. There's not much chance for them to defend themselves against that.
When I read about them, I was fist pumping, but really, in hindsight, you can see that it was kind of a suicide mission, maybe.
Maybe, yeah, it might be one of those, like, go out hunting kind of plays that the Northerners are effectively doing with this last battle. Like, what's that guy, the Big Bucket, and all those guys, Morgan Little and all those dudes, yeah.
Yep.
One last battle.
Exactly, yeah.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Okay, so George often goes from peaks to troughs, doesn't he? He doesn't like to make it too easy for any of the characters. You know, after a high, there's often a low afterwards. So what else could go wrong for Stannis here at the village or in the aftermath of the battle? What do you think, Aziz? What could be the trough? If Stannis is kind of does win this battle on a high, what follows?
Well, the biggest obstacle that he may yet face is that he still, which Justin Massey points out, they still, even if they win this battle, how are they going to take Winterfell? They're, you know, they talk about, oh, we'll build siege engines, we'll build towers, we'll do this. So, and Justin Massey's like, that's not going to work. And I agree, those things probably won't work. But that doesn't mean there aren't other options. That's part of the argument with Theon being alive still and him using him as a way to get in. The Manderleys may also be their way in. Say, look, we beat them, we're alive, etc. But none of those things have to work out, right? Like, the problem could be there's just no way for them to get into Winterfell. They can't take Winterfell. Or the weather, of course, is already a massive problem. It could get worse, right? Like, as bad as it is, does anyone actually think this is as bad as winter will be? I mean, it's bad, but... Mm-hmm. We aren't even in the winds of winter yet. So.
Right. It's just autumn's kiss, Aziz.
Yeah, exactly, right? So that's really kind of mind-boggling. I mean, I know they're over kind of being macho about it, the Northerners, but they're not exaggerating entirely. It's going to get a lot worse. And this army got stuck in this Crofters village for 19 days because of the weather. So one could see how weather could get worse and make that an even bigger problem, or anything along those lines. So to me, that's the biggest, most obvious problem. But obviously other things could go wrong, like other commanders dying, or Stannis' army taking too many casualties, or not enough of the because perhaps not enough of the Frey army falls in the water and they have to have more of a regular battle. It's pretty easy to see a lot of minor things going wrong, and maybe if enough of those minor things go wrong, the whole thing doesn't work out. But I feel like from a book perspective, from an excitement perspective, maybe one big thing going wrong might be more interesting. And that could be the confusion between the two armies or the weather. I think those are the most likely candidates for something going wrong. And that could imply Stannis having to retreat, which is, on one hand, you could see why that might happen. On the other hand, there's a lot of ink spilled on Asha judging Stannis as someone who's just not going to turn back, and how certain and iron he is. So Stannis, on one hand, something we still have to talk about a bit is the possibility of Stannis going back to the Nightfort. But for that to happen, he has to have a setback, or at least a victory. Like, if he takes Winterfell and gives it to somebody else, he's like, okay, well, time to head back to the Nightfort and work on preparing the wall. So that would be, that's not a very good example of something going wrong, but it does get us to the Nightfort without something going wrong. So, yeah, trying to feel all these options through, and I definitely could see something going wrong, but I feel like Stannis in the short term has to have successes because of other things foreshadowed for him, that he has to deal with, like Shireen, and I just really hope he goes to the Nightfort. I hope he doesn't die before that.
Okay, so the Battle of Ice, as we said, this is something that's definitely going to happen in Asha POV, so why don't we finish up with the battle talk and get onto the character of Asha. So we said in the Theon live stream, we hope his time as a kind of captive is coming to an end. So does this mean his sister becomes more valuable as a captive and a fly on the wall? Will Asha remain a captive through the Winds of Winter? If so, for how long? What do you think, Lady Gwyn?
Yes. I mean, I would put her as a captive, although captive is kind of, you know, take it as you will, because she's kind of an interesting sort of captive right now. She's got a personal guard of six of her most dedicated Ironborn with her that have been ransomed by Tycho Nestoris. So she's ostensibly Stannis' hostage, but she's walking around with personal protection. So it's all dependent on, you know, these guys have sworn to fight for Stannis and her own sort of, you know, sense of honor here, like remaining there. But I think she'll stay with him through the end, because we're going to talk about some of the things she might witness. So I don't Yes. see her leaving anytime soon.
So, if she was to be freed, Aziz, have you given any thought to how that might be? Could she free herself, or is someone else going to kind of rescue her? Do you have any ideas?
I don't see her leaving anytime soon. I feel like if she's going to leave, it'll be much later, perhaps after she's witnessed some of these things that we're going to talk about. I think her role as a witness POV is very important. And George kind of almost hinted that she's not going anywhere for a while by giving her that leg wound, or that broken ankle, or whatever it is. Because that's just, there's no horses left. The horses are being eaten or used for battle. She's got no chance to steal a horse. And like she says in her last chapter, she's got the she-bear guarding her. And Justin Massey's like, here, let me watch over her for a while. I'll make sure she doesn't escape. And Asha's like, yeah. And like, where am I going to go if I did want to escape? Like, what would I do? Like, where? Like, it's the snow. We're snowed in. Like, running away is suicide, let alone the fact that she literally cannot run. So George has really given us some strong evidence that she's not going anywhere, at least not of her own accord. And even with her men around her. And that's part of why is her men aren't going to leave her either. If she gets away, it's because they helped her. And if she's not going to get away, they're not going to try to run off without her, especially not like Triss. Of course, Theon has no say in it, but still. So that's it. I don't think she's going anywhere. I do think she's going somewhere later. I think she might be part of the plot line for the Iron Islands at the end. Someone has to rule the Iron Islands after Euron is presumably out of the story. I doubt the story ends with Euron alive. Let's get that out of the way. It seems kind of likely. But so that means there has to be some end game for the Iron Islands that involves probably a Greyjoy taking control somehow. And we all saw the Kingsmoot. Asha's vision for the Ironborn is clearly the best.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not the most successful, but clearly the one that we would like to see as far as our values,
right.
You know, as humans. Yeah. So maybe that's too much to hope for, but given the show, yada, 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 Asha just taking it all back, like, well, maybe that's what is, it's at least, it's not the be-all, end-all evidence, but it is evidence that something similar will happen, but with more detail, a lot more detail.
Right.
Not yada,
yeah.
yada, yada, off
yada, yada, yada. Oh, this happened.
Sorry, yeah, I think we can come back to some of the, like, long view predictions at the end of the episode. And I was going to ask, you know, speaking of what can be gleaned from the show, in the show there was a dark twist where we see Stannis presiding over the burning of his own daughter. If this plays out in the books, which a lot of the fandom believes is going to happen, then is it going to be through Asha's POV? Is Asha going to be our fly on the wall eyes for the Shireen sacrifice? What do you think, Lady Gwyn?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we're all alluding to just now about her having to stick around to see more important things. There's a very good chance of this. I mean, let's face it, it can't be Melisandre. We can't even imagine being in her head while this was happening, if she's the one that's organized this. Even assuming that even if he came back, it wouldn't be Davos. He can't be there. Davos would save Shireen or die trying. I mean, he wouldn't stand by and let this happen. We'd pretty much be 100%. I think this may be one thing that we can be 100% sure of. But, you know, seeing it through the eyes of a more neutral character who doesn't know Shireen might make it more impactful to the reader on some levels. And then we were talking the other night, and I was remembering how in her chapter, The Sacrifice, there were those men who were burned for cannibalism. And in that group, there was a very young, I don't know if he was a squire or just a very young man, who was one of the ones burned. And that was the one that she seemed to focus on of that group. I mean, once the other guy got himself killed, she was like duly horrified about this poor kid. So if that, I don't know if that's some sort of foreshadowing of her seeing some other young person in this horrific situation.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's going to be her. The sacrifice chapter really sets it up. She's all like, the she-bear, who later Asha notes is someone you don't mess with, is like, you don't need to see this. And Asha's like, oh, I'll watch it. I've seen worse. And then she sees it. She's like, okay, I haven't seen worse.
Yeah. Is like famous last words? Or
Yeah, it's like, narrator, she had not seen worse. And that's really telling, because she thinks of things she's seen and is like, yeah, this is worse. She thinks of the problem with seeing people throat slit and given to the drowned god and all that, and how that just, it's too much for her. So yeah, she's the one who's witnessed this sort of thing and has been set up for it and is in captivity with the man who's so likely to do it. So
yeah, so Asha could be our perfect eyes for the sacrifice. So why don't we move on to talk about Asha's romantic life, let's say. There are numerous men who desire Asha for one reason or another. There's Justin Massey of Stannis' camp, who might want to marry her. There's Triss Botley, who has a somewhat naive crush on her. And then there's Carl the Maid, who's been her lover off and on for years. Where will these relationships go in the Winds of Winter? Lady Gwyn, set us off.
Well, you know, she's got Triss and Carl right with her. They're part of that group of six that are with her and now have sworn to fight for Stannis. You know, Triss is suitable, but because he's, you know, now if Euron hadn't gotten involved, you know, he's a lord of in the Iron Islands. But she doesn't really, you know, it's not something that Asha's interested in pursuing. On the other hand, Carl, Asha herself thinks that that he's, you know, as much as she likes him and enjoys being with him and everything else about their relationship, he's not suitable. You know, he's not someone that she, Asha Greyjoy, could ever, you know, pursue a long-term relationship with. I mean, she's still very much in tune with the sort of expectations of their feudal society that they live in, which is an interesting thing about her, because, you know, she seems like she's kind of an iconoclast and, you know, she's a great pirate queen, but she does give thought to, oh, you know, Carl isn't suitable, I couldn't do that. And she's also, you know, I referred to her sort of the honor of her, you know, just, you know, her broken ankle aside, I don't think she would run away from Stannis. Well, maybe she would, but, you know, she seems like she's very much honoring all the elements of their sort of social contract that exists. So, long-winded way of saying, as much as she might want to have a relationship with Carl, I don't see that going anywhere. And Triss, you know, as much as he wants to have a relationship with her, I don't think that's going anywhere either. Which leaves us with who?
Justin Massey, who in the sample, Theon sample chapter for the Winds of Winter, is sent overseas to Essos to try and get a sellsword company for Stannis. What do you think about Asha and Justin Massey, Aziz?
Well, I am a little dubious it will go anywhere like you guys are. Justin Massey isn't exactly set up as the kind of character you think has like this, is the guy who's going to be ruling the Ironborn.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't really, that just seems weird. I wonder, I do think that there's more to come from him because, yeah, he's this lead. He's going to be bringing back sellswords probably, and I think that's going to happen, especially because he's been told, even if you hear I'm dead, you know, keep going. So Massey's not going to be like, oh, Stannis is dead, so I'll just never mind. So he's specifically been told to keep going even in that case. So I'm really curious to see if he's going to bring back a lot of men, or how many men, and whether Arya is going to be involved at all if he goes to directly to the Iron Bank and starts gathering swords in Braavos, or if he goes somewhere else because he's already got the paperwork. I don't know exactly how this the logistics of getting the funds from the Iron Bank works and all that. That's a little bit of a missing piece to the puzzle there. But they're supporting him, which is a gigantic thing. I mean, the Iron Bank backing someone is massive. And that is part of, we touched on why Stannis became so energized. I'm pretty sure that's a big reason why, for part of his energy, is not only has he figured out the Karstark plan by then, but he's gotten, like, a massive infusion of money, which he also, as a commander and military strategist, knows that that is crucially important. And the fact that the Iron Bank is backing him and not the Iron Throne is also a huge shot in the arm. He's like, wait, they're not going to back multiple sides. They don't, that's not their kind of, people do that, but the Iron Bank does it apparently.
Right.
So, so there's just a lot there. So this is kind of veering away from Asha again, but, but that's the nature of a POV who's set up to be a witness to important things. Her feelings on all these things are really important. And yeah, like whether or not she has a child later. Ah, gosh, that's...
We'll definitely come to that later. So
not much later.
as we're talking about her suitors, let's not forget that Asher is married. You know, it's easy to forget. The dude's name is Eric Ironmaker. He's an old guy. So what's going to happen to this relationship, if you can call it that, Lady Gwyn?
This relationship. Not only they're married, but it was a proxy marriage, and the stand-in bride was a seal. So I'm not sure, you know, how much this is going to stand up. And the last time the bride saw the groom was, I think, must have been at the King's Moot, where she basically humiliated him in front of everyone. He's a very old man and very enormous and can't, Jeff. he can't stand up and other things. So yeah, he's, you know, there's not any really chance of that becoming a relationship per se. If he dies, which, you know, everybody seems to think that he could die at any moment, you know, where does that leave the Iron Islands? I think that's an interesting question, because does his family have any hold over Asha if he dies? He's Euron's steward, or, you know, he's Euron's representative. He's who was left in charge. So what happens then? You know, is that maybe the inn that she needs?
Hmm. Okay, just getting back to something that Aziz mentioned. Before she was captured, Asha and Carl made love at Deepwood Mott. Afterwards, she thought about the need to brew some moon tea, so as not to risk bringing another kraken into the world. As far as we can tell, she never got that moon tea. So by now, about 3 months have passed. So what we want to know is, will Asha be welcoming a little Carl into the Winds of Winter? And we asked our followers on Twitter last night what they thought. Take it away, Lady Gwyn.
Well, the sample of the fandom that responded to the quiz was pretty evenly split. We got respondents of 52% saying yes, little Carl is on the way, and 48% said no. I have to admit that I put myself in the 48%, but you know, it's a statistical tie pretty much. So you could become, you know, you could win an election with that kind of...
Oh, dear.
I don't know. You know, it'd be great if it'd be an interesting and fun plot point, but I have to point out that we see very, very few babies actually being born. You can count them on one hand, even if you include Rhaego. You can still count them on one hand.
That's true.
Count them on three fingers.
Count them on three finger Hob.
Exactly. Even three finger Hob could count them all
on
one hand.
Even so. Great, John.
Exactly.
Aziz, what do you think of the chances of this pregnancy?
Okay, so my take on this pregnancy is that it's George gardening. He threw that moon tea line in there because he wants the option. Maybe he's already decided one way or the other, but it gives him the option. By suggesting that she didn't have a chance to have moon tea, the door is open, but it doesn't, if that door doesn't open, or rather, if nothing emerges from that door, a little Carl or Carla, then it's nothing, and no one's going to be like, why isn't she pregnant? You know, that's right. That's not how that works. So let's get dark with this idea. If she has a child and is still in captivity with Stannis, that is a child with King's blood.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
So
yeah. Is Stannis gonna round up all the children in the Winds of Winter?
Oh Lord!
Bonfire, a bonfire of yeah,
the bonfire of
inhumanity,
the
inhumanities.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you know, I guess that's actually a very good take, that it's something that may not have been decided, may have been decided now, but wasn't decided then. It's that is dark. I'm just like thrown into a whirlwind of darkness now, thinking about how that could play out.
he could have, like, that child could be the heir to the Iron Islands, or it could be burned to death, or Theon could be, you know, or Theon's child with the girl from the Miraham. You know, there's just these possibly pregnant women that could be the future ruler of the Iron Islands.
Right.
But we don't even know if these children exist.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that's a good point, that there is a parallel, also possible baby Kraken in Theon's, you know, in Theon's storyline. So maybe he was hedging his bets to see where this was going to go. Oh, well, it could make either one of them have a kid. I have the power to do to do whichever one strikes me. So, yeah.
I've wondered the same thing about Cersei, you know, whether she'll ever, you know, she wouldn't have another child because of the Valonqar thing, but you could see how someone like, I don't know, Euron, since that relationship was on TV, it's kind of odd to picture that on the show or in the books, but if it did happen, that would be the same kind of thing he would want. He would want a child from her, maybe because of the king's blood power and then what he could do with that kid. Not that he wanted an heir necessarily or something like that. I don't know. But this is all like possible, like, but probably not. You know, Jeff Hartline says in the chat that more burnings might undercut the narrative impact of Shireen's burning, which is, yeah, that's true. Too many burnings would definitely make that feel less powerful. Especially if Asha's already had her own child burn, then seeing Shireen burn would not be nearly as horrifying. Her own child would be worse for her, from her perspective.
From her perspective, yeah. So if she's the point of view, you know, that might. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, I think I agree with what Jeff said there.
What if it's just her fear of it? Like, she's got, the child is born and she sees it happen to Shireen and she's like, oh my God, they're going to do this to my baby too.
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't actually happen. But yeah, she could have the fear of it.
Definitely. That's exactly what I was thinking. That, you know, I mean, we've seen that. We've seen that in other, you know, in, you know, at the wall, this fear of a baby being taken and
driving the narrative.
Yeah. So certainly could be that.
It would give her more sympathy for, yeah, just yeah, her being a mother.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it could be. It could play into the Shireen thing. Or if she's pregnant, watching
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be born. She could just be,
yeah,
you're right.
She could just be pregnant. Wow. And thinking, you know, this makes it, you know, it just makes it, like I said, maybe more impactful in some way, that's unexpected to us. So.
Okay, dark conversation, and it's not going to stop. after Ramsay tortures Theon, Asha barely recognizes her brother. He's so changed by the whole experience. It must be difficult to relate to Theon these days with what he's gone through and the changes internally and externally of Theon Greyjoy. So, as siblings, what's their future? How do they kind of relate to each other? Lady Gwyn, have you got any ideas?
Well, you know, she recognized enough to know that he was a dead man as far as Stannis and the Northmen are concerned. So, and she's already tried to ease his execution, that is, save him from burning. You know, she's challenged Stannis to execute him in front of the tree in a, you know, Stark style or Northern style execution, rather than giving him to this foreign god that, you know, the Northmen do not hold with. And since his crimes were crimes against the North, she's made a very good case for that, very boldly, might I add. So, you know, will she go as far as actually trying to save him by releasing him after some sort of chaotic event? Maybe a battle, maybe further down the road, somebody, you know, Stannis dies or or who knows, whatever kind of chaos we've talked about could happen after the battle on the ice, does there come an opportunity where Asha does something to save Theon, you know, get him out of there?
Interesting. Yeah, I definitely feel there's, you know, some dynamics that need to be explored between these two. And in, I think it's A Feast for Crows, Asha talks to Triss Bottley about the historical precedent of Torgon Latecomer. How do we see this playing out in our arc, Aziz? You know, why was Torgon the Latecomer introduced? And what's the future for this kind of plot point?
It's a good example of George using history to perhaps foreshadow the future, something he loves to do, that we talk about, you know, ad infinitum, which, because it never gets old and there's always new things to discover. So, hey. But yeah, so the Torgon the Latecomer was a dude who missed the King's Moot, but he was eligible for it. He was off reaving, and of all places, apparently the Shield Islands, because, hey, that's, they love to go there. And he, when he came back, people were grumbling about the quality of the king that they actually had elected. So they're like, actually, maybe we made a mistake and legal loophole. This guy should have been eligible. That all applies to Theon. Theon is Balon's heir. He absolutely should have had his place at the King's Moot to take a shot, to take a stab, to say, hey, this is why I should be the leader. If not the standard laws that would have had him be the king of the Iron Islands anyway. But, and you could see why the Iron Islands might be like, eh, we made a mistake electing Euron. This guy's not working out so great. It's not hard to, you don't have to squint to see that possibility emerging. And so how we get to that point, I don't have any idea, but you could, the fact that Theon may have impregnated that girl on the ship that took him to the Iron Islands, he even mentions it. He's like, all the times I've been with you, you're bound to have a child. It's like, no, right. Hello. On the other hand, it's a little, you wonder about that a little bit, because we saw that Captain the Mirham a few months later. And I mean, he wouldn't have necessarily mentioned his daughter being pregnant, but this kid would have already been born by now. So if he's out there, I don't know how anyone finds this kid or, yeah, but yeah. There obviously there's ways for that to happen. It's not something that's impossible. It's just, how do you get from point B to point C here after we get from point A to point B? I have no idea. But it's easy to see that happening once the path is clear. Like, Theon and Asha survive, or Theon's child is discovered somehow, and that this person is put forward as an heir. But that, like, how is a child going to rule the Iron Islands? So I don't know. That's also a little strange.
Yeah, like the whole, it gets back to the whole, you know, boy lords and being the bane of houses, especially in times like this. So, but you know,
if he has an heir, it helps his case because he can't procreate.
But yes, like, exactly. So where he's at, from where he's at right now, you know, obviously going forward, he can't make new heirs. So it would certainly be nice if he had one ready made from his past. So I think, you know, definitely I was thinking of a kind of parallel, I guess, or maybe I was kind of like, just finding ways for them to fit together to a something completely different, but a show that a lot of us are watching, or maybe books a lot of us have read, In the Last Kingdom. This is spoilery if you haven't watched the most recent season, so fair warning, block your ears. We see Uhtred accepting being the Lord of Mercia, and then he turns around and gives it to Æthelflaed. It's like, oh no, actually, you're the lady.
My first
of
act is
I quit, and it's going to be her because she's the one that's worthy. And you know, could we see? I was thinking about that. You know, maybe Theon would do something like that if they used the precedent of Torgon Latecomer and the fact that he's alive to call a new King's Moot or invalidate Euron's King's Moot. And you know, could he go there and sort of, you know, put himself forward, but then, you know, throw in all of his support to his sister. So I was thinking about that, and then I realized that that's more or less how it worked out in the show. So, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if that's worth anything, but because they did kind of, like you said, yada yada yada, that whole kind of storyline. So,
well, it definitely seems more of Ash's plan and interest than Theon's, especially what we've discussed about Theon's future last week. So the seeds for this in the story are when Asha became a POV in Feast, where she desired to be the ruler of the Iron Islands. So to what extent does this fact inform us of her eventual endgame? Is ruling Asha's destiny in this story? What do you think, Aziz?
I think there's a pretty good chance of it, yeah. I mean, just looking at the high points, I think, obviously, as always, whenever we reference the show, it's just as possible evidence. It's never, well, not never, but it, rarely is it something that you're like, oh, that's definitely going to also happen in the books. But just the fact that Asha ends up in charge of the Iron Islands is a pretty darn big clue. I mean, you can't get away from that. Theon having a noble death in the show, that is a distinct possibility in the books as well. It won't be that kind of, it won't be fighting the Night King, but fighting for Winterfell or fighting for the North or fighting for the Starks or just a brave death, fighting for humanity. Like any of those things make, are totally worthy endings for him that make sense. And that kind of leaves her as the most likely standing. Like if you count all the Greyjoys, who's going to live? Euron? Nah. Victarion? Nah. Theon, maybe. And then Aaron, like, dude's already strapped to the prow of a ship. Like, no. And he's not a king type anyway. So, where Asha seems like the most likely one to be alive when it's all done as far as Greyjoys. And if she's got a Greyjoy son, or Theon has a Greyjoy son, and she kind of can rule as a regent, so they don't have to accept her as queen because they're all against queens. I don't, you know, maybe they change their mind, but if they don't, this is kind of a way around that, where she's sort of like a regent. She's like Ned Stark, or you know, hopefully more like Ned than Cersei, I would think, but. But that kind of thing. And Joe Magician suggested having those two kids marry Asha's kid with Carl, marrying Theon's Merriham child.
Hey, Asha could raise them up and, you know, just be like,
it's not
the,
a bad idea.
So if Asha's story has a kind of destiny written on it that she could be a ruler one day, Lady Gwyn, what kind of ruler do you think Asha would be?
Well, I give you the pinecone speech from Feast for Crows.
Turnips.
Turnips, pinecones. She basically, in the King's Mood, she illustrated that all their victories in the North brought them nothing more than pinecones, pebbles, and turnips. And she concludes that she will offer peace, land, victory. She says, I'll give you Sea Dragon Point and the Stony Shore, black earth and tall trees and stones enough for every younger son to build a hall. We'll have the Northmen too as friends to stand with us against the Iron Throne. Your choice is simple. Crown me for peace and victory, or crown mine uncle for more war and more defeat. So, in my opinion, if Asha is a ruler, she is going to follow in the steps of her grandfather, Quellan, who was highly respected amongst the Ironborn, but he was also a reformer who sought out a greater sort of integration with the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah, I like the callback to Kellan here a lot, and I think that that is super relevant, and I think that what Asha's plan for the Iron Islands was before the King's Moot is going to ring even more necessary afterwards, because I do think Euron is going to just, his leadership is going to cause a lot of problems for the Ironborn as well as Westeros in general. But they're going to be really badly screwed, I think, financially and just manpower-wise. A lot of their people are going to be dead. And they aren't exactly a financial powerhouse in the first place. Their economy isn't very strong. So somebody that looks to rebuild the whole thing after it's been destroyed by mismanagement, and another attempt at the old way, or Euron's new way, whatever, new old way. I don't even know what you want to call his thing. But it's not going to work. I don't think it's going to be interesting and fun. But at the end, they're going to have to pick up the pieces. And Asha's really, really well equipped to do that, because it was already her plan in the first place. It was she had plans for growth and trade. And that is exactly the kind of thing that will get them out of this hole if they agree to do it and follow her lead. So I think there's... It's interesting that of all the kingdoms, the Iron Islands looks to maybe have one of the most optimistic endings if it goes like this at all. Of course, we could be just completely wrong about everything. I feel like if Sansa ends up in charge of the North, that's pretty optimistic and a good, like, you could see how that would work out well in the long term. But similarly, but Sansa hasn't laid out plans for the North yet. We've already seen Asha like lay out a platform. So it seems a lot more present, foreshadowed, even if Sansa is a much more important character. So I think I lean very, very strongly in that direction as far as that being partly set up for her to come back to that as an option to kind of wrap it all up.
Yeah, and that's George's. It's so much his thing too, like that. The fact that she has a platform and she has plans, you know, like if you go back to the classic George wondering about Aragorn's tax policy, you know, like here we're actually seeing a character who's a potential ruler actually, I mean, not her tax policy, but she is actually defining what her policy would be, which you don't get to see with a lot of these people. I mean, Euron's policy is... Oh, I don't know. It's just dragons, blah blah blah. You know, it's kind of
profit.
It's yeah. kind of hollow.
Part
so,
profit, yeah.
yeah, exactly. So,
and let us lead into a final talking point on this subject. So, ultimately, are the Iron Isles going to be incorporated into the Seven Kingdoms? Once again, Lady Gwyn.
Well, I'm going to just be kind of snarky and turn this back around on you. Does anyone in the Seven Kingdoms even remember that the Iron Islands declared themselves independent? I mean, like considering who's in charge now, or who might be in charge in the future, like, who among them even has the time or the strength or the will to prosecute another war to bring the Iron Islands back into the fold? I mean, thinking about how much of a big deal it was when Robert Baratheon had to rally. I mean, he had, you know, basically, you know, the North, and he had the Westerlands, and he had... did he have the Vale? I mean, he had a huge army put together to go and bring and defeat Balon's first rebellion. So, I mean, it's not a small thing to bring the Iron Islands back, unless they come willingly. So that's, you know, it's a question of, do they need to be brought back, or are they just going to bring themselves back?
If I could step back to Kellan for just a second, too,
yes.
I think that's the fact that he tried this. I mean, that's a historical pattern you see in the real world. You see people try to reform something and they fail, but other people come along and try to make the same reforms later and eventually succeeds. It's because that need is there. It's not just like, it's not random. It's this culture needs it. Some people within it see that. They move towards making these reforms. The population resists it. But maybe the next generation doesn't, or the generation after that doesn't, and eventually maybe these reforms take, or not. But I like that setup that she won't be the first one trying to do this if she does it. In fact, I suspect George hadn't written this stuff about Kellan when he wrote that, or hadn't thought, well, he definitely hadn't written it. Whether he'd thought of it, I'm not sure. But if he had thought of it, I feel like he would have had Asha bring it up. She might have mentioned, this is a vision, you know, my grandfather Kellan Greyjoy, who was a overwhelming figure,
call
6 foot six,
yes.
big dude, like successful, calling his name out would lend a little power to her cause. So mm-hmm. I think that was just something George added later. So maybe now she'll be saying, like, if she gets a chance later, mm-hmm. she'll bring up her granddad.
Yeah.
And that'll help bring a few people to her side. Like Roderick the Reader. Like, another thing about Asha that you gotta love is her nuncle Roderick, who is one of the, like, everyone's top five Ironborn, you know. Everyone's,
yes.
Maybe number one non-Greyjoy Ironborn, you know.
Yes. Definitely. Yeah, I like that. I think if we get to Winds of Winter and we see Asha all of a sudden talking about her grandfather, you know, that's pretty good indication that, like you said, the reason why George kind of writes a lot of this backstory is to inform the story that he's writing. So, you know, that's, if we see that, we can probably be pretty sure that that's the path she's going to take. Like, maybe she starts thinking about Quellon Greyjoy and we're like, oh yeah, I know where this is going. Right.
Yeah. I wonder about them returning to the fold. I wonder about Asha and the independence issue, whether she'll try to keep them independent and say, look, we're going to be independent, but we're going to behave. Mm-hmm. And if we don't behave, then we'll cry, you know, then you'll have cause. Mm-hmm. You'll have, like, if she signs a contract, says, look, if we don't, if this contract is broken and lots of reaving happens, then I you know, you have my permission to come stop us, but I will keep them under control or something like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But also one other thing about that, she gets to say, I told you so, if she wants to. She said in the King's Mood, she said, crown me for peace and victory, or, you know, crown my nuncle for war and defeat. And she can be like, look, you crown my uncle, war and defeat.
Yeah.
Hello. If you listen to me this time.
You got what
those few
promised.
Of you left.
Right. Yes. Truth.
So I think we can all hope for some peace in the Iron Islands towards the latter end of the books. And that's it for today. Thank you so much to Aziz, our very special guests. Why don't you tell us where to find you and what you're up to creatively?
All right. Thank you for having me, first of all. It's really fun to talk about the Winds of Winter. Asha's super fun. Predicting where she's going to go and what she's going to witness is really interesting topic, because it's some of the biggest events in the North are possibly going to be witnessed by her. So that's huge. So what we're doing over on my channel is we're working our way through the books. We're doing Valar Reredus, of course, and we just finished Storm of Swords. So we are starting Feast for Crows a week from tomorrow. Tomorrow, as in Sunday, since this records on Saturday, we are releasing a Serwyn of the Mirror Shield episode. It's a bit of a different style episode for us. It's all visual. My voice is in it, but not my face, so that's the unusual part. A lot more graphics and maps and stuff like that, so that's cool. And we're, what else are we doing? I always forget. We're doing other things. So just check out History of Westeros to stay informed, and you'll know what's coming. With a Feast for Crows underway, we're going to be getting into some more of our scripted content as well. Blackwood Part 2 is still under development, and we have a Lomas Longstrider episode in the pipeline that's been there for a while. So yeah, we got lots of stuff going.
Yeah. And lots of Ironborn coming up in Feast for Crows.
Ah, yes, yes. People are very excited for Feast for Crows. It's an interesting thing about the reread project is that, you know, you're going through the first three books, and most of the things you're tackling are things that you can speak to the whole arc of. Like, we could speak to the whole arc of Robb Stark and Catelyn. Well, not Stoneheart, but Catelyn Tully. But with getting into Feast and Dance, it's more like, well, is this foreshadowing or not? I don't know. But when you see the whole cycle, you can say that was foreshadowing. We saw it happen later. But with these later books, it's more about guessing and figuring out. So it's a whole different look. So that's really fun. So thanks again for having me, y'all. And I look forward to your future Streams of Winter with other guests that I will be watching.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the future, I thank you for being here today. Thanks all of our listeners for being here today. Thank you to our listeners in the future who will be listening or watching the pre-recorded version of this. Good to have you here. Next week, we'll be back, and we are going to have a special guest with us talking about Sansa Stark, and that is going to be Chloe from Girls Gone Canon, aka Liza Narber on Twitter. We're very excited for that, and that will be as a companion to our upcoming episode 2 in our Winds of Winter Primer series, which should be into its patron rollout by the time we get to next week. So we're not promising a day yet.
We're not promising, but I can promise that it's a real monster. I've been working on the editing side, and it's just looking like at least 3 hours. It's Bran, Sansa, Arya, Davos. You know, it should be a really good episode, so that should be out pretty soon. And as the live streams, we'll be back next week, as Lady Gwyn said, every Saturday for the foreseeable future, talking the Winds of Winter point of views. Thanks to all of you who have tuned in. And don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe. If you'd like to support Radio Westeros, please know that we have a Patreon campaign with all manner of patron benefits. And thanks again. Stay safe and see you next time.
Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.